Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 3 of Season 3 of Movie Raw Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me again today is Jake Blewett of Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. Welcome back to the show, Jay.
Hello, thank you.
It's been a lot of fun, and hopefully you'll be able to get that piece of luggage off the carousel.
Okay, I'm trying. It's really jammed, isn't it?
Yeah. It's because it's heavy. Going back to what we were talking about yesterday, maybe you must have a body in there.
I mean, I don't know what you've heard. But...
I'm waiting for Dell's trunk to come off. Because yeah. There's definitely a body in there.
You want to make it two?
Could be.
Play your cards right.
There you go. Minute 3 begins with the man finally getting his luggage off the carousel and ends with Takagi's speech, which gets cut off in the middle. So yesterday we ended with John McClane walking through LAX and standing near the carousel and sort of having himself crunched by the, you know, by the title of Die Hard from both sides of the screen. And we got a shot of a man trying to get a piece of luggage off of the carousel, but having a lot of trouble. But in this one, we see that he is able to finally get it off, but he still stays hunched over after he pulls off, which I thought was pretty funny to watch.
Yeah, he's like fake struggling with it.
Yeah,
exactly. He's got it off and he's like messing with the handle, but it's clear it's all fine.
Yeah. And then we see McClane just, you know, standing around in the luggage area, you know, holding his beige overnight bag and decides to light up a cigarette.
Like a goddamn villain.
Well,
what does he think he's doing?
In 1988, things were very different. You were allowed to actually smoke in there. Now, on planes, you were also allowed to smoke. They, you know, originally... you can smoke on planes in any area, and then they sectioned things off in the 70s so that you'd have the smoking area, which I thought was really funny because, you know, it's not as if there's a wall there to keep the smoke from going forward. It's like
the air stays back there with them, right? I'm sure that's how it works.
Well, because of centrifugal, no, sorry, velocity, that the smoke stays back or whatever.
Yeah, must be. Science.
Complete. And then in the mid-80s, they began starting campaigns to try and stop smoking on planes and in airports. But up until the early 90s, you were still allowed to smoke both on a plane and in the airport. Now, basically this all was related to various laws that are either for the state or local laws or things like that. There were never any federal laws at the time as to where you're allowed to smoke and where you're not allowed to smoke. In 2002, there were 13 of the U.S.'s largest airports that were completely smoke-free. And 8 years later, there were 22 of them. So it's not much of a difference, I guess you can say, within those 8 years. You know, they added, what is it, 9 airports that became smoke-free. But as of today, I don't think you're allowed to smoke anywhere on a plane. And most airports... I think most airports might have like a little room where you can go smoke or something like that. But, you know, you can't smoke in general areas when you're walking around the airport. That's for sure. So then he starts looking around as he's taking a puff. And my biggest question is what is he waiting for? You know, like we'll find out, I guess, next week. You're not even going to be here for it. But we're going to find out that, you know, he doesn't really have any plans as to how he's going or where he's going. Or things like that.
That's it. Maybe he's not waiting. Maybe he's deciding. He's like, okay, so I need to get a taxi. But, I mean, should I go to the party? Should I go to Cappy's in wherever Cappy lives?
Ramona, he says. Not Pomona, Ramona. Right.
Okay. I always hear it as Pomona.
Yeah. And then as he's waiting, we hear over the PA system, Flight 247 to Tucson, now boarding at gate 14. And she says it twice. And then she says, then we hear her say, Mr. Edward Machowski, please report to the white courtesy phone. So first of all, I decided to look up. I mean, last season I checked about flight numbers and things like that, how they're usually not reused and things like that. So my biggest question was, okay, what is Flight 247 and does it fly to Tucson? And apparently it doesn't. The only Flight 247 that I could find is from United Airlines, which flies from Dulles to Charlotte. So it's Washington, D.C. to Charlotte, North Carolina. So basically, that's that flight, but it doesn't fly to Tucson. So I guess they just made it up. Or maybe at the
Yeah.
time there was something. I tried to look back in 1988 whether there really was a flight at that time, but I couldn't find anything with that.
Maybe they just didn't care and thought nobody ever would.
They never thought that someone would be doing a second Movies by Minute podcast on Die Hard, looking at it 1 minute at a time. And so then it mentions Edward Machowski. So I decided to look up that name to see if there's anybody in IMDb or something. Like usually when there's a random name thrown out that doesn't sound so
It's named
random,
after somebody,
it's usually named after somebody. Okay. So it's not in the script. The script doesn't have anything about this. So it's not something that came from the screenwriter. So it must have been someone on production that decided just to throw in that name. I did a search. I found a whole bunch of people whose names are Edward Machowski, more than I thought I would find, but no one who's seems related at all to the movie industry or anyone connected to it. I found like a researcher who does like research on fish somewhere in New England, somewhere in New England. And I found a whole bunch of military veterans who also have that name. Again, I have no idea who they're specifically referring to, so I don't
I
know.
can't help you.
Nope, you don't need to help me. That's and so he needs to report to the white courtesy phone. So what do you know about courtesy phones?
Not a thing. Sometimes they're white. No, nothing. No.
So a
Not even sure
courtesy
what it means.
phone is a telephone that's located either in an airport or a train station or a hotel or many other places where there are a lot of travelers where they're able to relay messages to a specific person. So they would say on the speaker, Ed Machowski, please report to the white courtesy phone. So you have to walk around, try and find where this white phone is. And, then they will tell you your party is waiting for you at gate, whatever, who knows, whatever they're trying to say. Usually start to find information or whatever about things like that. So the funniest thing is that, I'm assuming you've seen Airplane. So Airplane
I
makes
have.
so much fun of their courtesy phone thing, telling people different colored courtesy phones and things like that. So yeah, they do a nice job of that. And then we switch over to a completely different scene. We hear chamber music, and then we see I guess you can it looks like an office building on the inside, but it could also be a restaurant or something like that. It's hard to tell at the beginning what it actually is.
The string quartet doesn't help.
No,
That could
not
also
at
be a
all,
restaurant.
not at all. And then we see a Oriental man walk out of an office buttoning up his jacket. And at this point, we get the on-screen credit for Alan Rickman.
Who is
Okay.
not this man?
Who is not this man? That is true. Now, I just realized we didn't even mention when we had. Did we mention the Bruce Willis credit?
You did, because it's on his arm.
Ah, that's right. That's
When
right.
he's
When it
got,
showed his
yeah,
arm.
he
That's
did.
right. I forgot about that fact. It's been so long. It's been a few
It's been a
hours since we
day.
talked about it.
It's been 2 days.
Yeah, that's true. And then we see the actor whose name is James Shigeta, I think that's how it's pronounced, who plays Takagi. He was born in 1929, passed away in 2014 of pulmonary failure. Now, there's a little bit of trivia about who they wanted to originally play this actor, this character. Do you know who it was?
I do not know for sure, no. Who was it?
They wanted George Takei to play this character.
Okay, yeah, I suppose he would be the most, or amongst the most famous Japanese American actors at the time.
Yes. And apparently they sent the request or the script to his production group or whatever you want to call it, and they failed to give it to him. And he apparently was very, very upset about this.
I can imagine,
His
yeah.
agent mixed things up, and George Takei was not happy at all. I don't know how happy he would have been to having his brains blown out later in the movie.
That's well, that would have made like James
Sulu would have changed
James
things.
Shigeta James Shigeta does a great job on the film. I have no problems at all with his performance. But I think if it was Sulu, there you'd have this. This is coming from somebody who has never seen the Star Trek TV series. I only saw the Star Trek films last year, but I just culturally am aware of him as a character. Seeing him be killed halfway through the film would have so much more of an impact.
That's true.
I think you might maybe hate Alan Rickman too much because he's not in my bloody week here. A week without Alan Rickman in it, you bastard.
Yeah.
He
Sorry. Well, you get his credit. You get his credit today.
yes, true. That he is
Jay,
such
it's the price you pay for getting, the first week every time.
I yes, it's my lot in life.
Yes.
I may never meet a bad guy, it seems. Although I had Kevin Bacon for Planes,
There
Trains
you go. And Targo.
and the Commandant in Great Escape. So I've had the villains earlier. So Alan Rickman is a phenomenal villain in this film, but he's like a villain where you're not necessarily on board and wanting him to win, but you like him.
Yes,
You
he's
kind
very
of want to
likable.
spend time with him. So if he killed Sulu, that might affect that a little bit.
Could be. Could be.
So
Well, again, it didn't matter because, his Takai's soon to not be agent made a big mistake.
yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if he actually fired the guy for that.
I mean, maybe. Well,
It's not the
depends
first
if he
time
made
this
it
type of thing
happen.
has happened. You hear it quite often that there are people who are sent the script and, the agent decides that they don't want it and
Well, I would like to think they would use it as a learning experience where George Clooney would say, okay, well, give me scripts. Don't just fire him for not doing it once. Give him a second chance to not do it again.
I don't know.
Maybe.
Who knows? Maybe this isn't the first time that he did it, or maybe it was.
Maybe.
Who
Maybe.
knows? Right. So James Shigeta has 64 TV credits and 24 movie credits. He actually did voice work in Mulan. He played a vice admiral in Midway in 1976. But then there's a movie called The Unbidden, which is dedicated to him from 2014. But the most interesting thing I found was is that he has a credit for a movie that supposedly, and according to IMDb, came out in 1988, and there's a dedication to him, in memory of. But he didn't die in 1988. So this there was a
I mean, his
fan,
character did.
his character, that is true. That is true. It goes back to another Star Trek connection. He was in a fan film called Yorktown, A Time to Heal, which was a Star Trek fan film that was started in 1986, and they somehow got both George Takei and James Shigeta to be in this movie. And they had a lot of problems, and it was actually only released this past April. So again, I don't know why I wasn't able to find that it was released with bad special effects or whatever back in 1988, but I know that the full version was only released just a few months ago in the beginning of April 2022. And at that point, there are 13 actors who are this movie was dedicated to who have passed in the 34 years since the movie was made. So I found it to be interesting because normally you don't see older movies that are, that have in memorial, for someone in
Yeah.
memoriam for somebody who, passed many years later. So then we get Takagi continue to walk. He fixes his tie and begins to talk to another executive in Japanese. We're not really sure what is he saying. And then the response is, "How do you do?" And he's the typical executive walking around greeting people He passes the four-piece orchestra that are playing, and nods his head towards them also. Then we get the Alexander Gudinov on-screen credit.
Yes, I want to pause on that one for a second
Go
because
ahead.
there is a connection between Die Hard and Con Air. They share a cast member, which is not Alexander Gudinov, but it is Alexander Gudinov's stunt double, who is Don Charles McGovern. He is the stunt double for Carl in this film, but he's also one of the buddies of Kevin Gage at the start of Con Air, who's the guy who Cameron Poe kills in the car park. Don Charles McGovern is one of his friends. So one of the guys beaten up on Nick Cage at the start of Con Air is the stunt double for Carl, who
Oh,
dies.
that's really cool. Does he look like him in Con Air? I mean, you look at
Well,
him and you'd say,
he
"Oh,
looks more like
that's
him in Con
Carl."
Air than he does Carl in Die Hard. He doesn't look like
Okay,
Carl. I
okay.
think it's just the same kind of build and
That's
haircut.
fair. That's fair.
He's also in Die Hard 2 in the Blue Light team. But more on that later.
Yes, much later.
Much, much
Much
later. He's also in Demolition Man.
later.
He did stunts for like Rambo and Rocky 3. He's done a lot of Stallone work. He's been in a bunch of stuff.
Well, Stallone was supposed to be in this movie. That's how apparently they hired him.
Yeah.
And then they said,
Indeed.
oh,
And Hunt for October, talked about yesterday. He did stunts in that one as well.
There you go. John McTiernan.
Six episodes of Diagnosis Murder. Stunts in basketball. Yeah, storied career.
Yeah, completely. Then we get the on-screen career of Bonnie Bedelia, who we will talk about later this week. And then Takagi takes out a bunch of index cards from his pocket and looks at them. So, have you ever used index cards?
I used them to revise for exams back in my school days. And I had some for my wedding speech, but I eventually was off book for those, so I kind of learned the speech a little bit. I thought I did. It turns out I'd forgotten some bits when it came to like checking the cards afterwards. Oh, I forgot this whole section here, but it wasn't important. It's fine. So I haven't used them much. What is the origin of index cards? Please tell me. What
Well, I
are
first
they?
wanted to say how I've used them. So I used to actually have a little box where I would put information about all the different videos that I had, and I would have index cards, and I would alphabetize them. I was crazy even as a kid.
That's
It
not crazy.
hasn't
That's perfectly normal.
worn off in the years since. And I would have this little, I remember I had this little green box that I would open up, and I had, markers for each of the letters, A, B, C, and you can flip through them and you can check to see what movies I had, and I put all the information on these index cards. Okay, I put on, obviously the name of the movie, I put the names of the characters, names of the actors, the runtime, a whole bunch of different. I think I might have even written like a little synopsis of each of them, so that if anybody, wanted to watch a movie, I can just show them the card and they can then decide whether they want to watch the movie or not. Obviously, spoiler free. Obviously.
Obviously.
So, an index card is a or what, do you know what's called in England?
Note card? I
It's
don't
called a
know.
record card.
No. Okay.
And in Australian, it's called a system card.
Okay.
All right, so it's a card stock, which is heavy paper, which is cut to a standard size, and it's used for recording or storing small amounts of discrete data. A collection of such cards either serves as or aids the creation of an index for expedited lookup of information, such as a library category or back of the book index or Rob's movie list from when he was a kid. The system was actually invented by a man named Carl Linnaeus back in 1760, which I was surprised to see that it's something that's been around for so long.
Yeah.
He was actually a scientist. He created these cards in order to help with the information overload that was facing early scientists.
Gonna say that was before they had DVDs to organize. So that doesn't make any sense why they'd invent them.
Yeah, I'm not even talking about DVDs. I was talking about videos, but yeah,
Oh, yeah,
that's
they
the
had those
best.
back then. Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yes, video, of course. And then in 1898, a man named James Rand created the Rand Ledger Company with his son, James Rand Jr. And they dominated sales of index cards throughout the world, throughout most of the 20th century. Now, after reading this, I do remember that I used to buy, and it used to say on it, Rand. So I found this to be very interesting.
So having the name James Rand and giving that to your son to be James Rand Jr. is so cruel that their initials are now JRJR.
Well, apparently his parents did the same thing to him. They called, no, he was JRSR, right? Okay, that's true. Yeah. It's a little better, I guess. Yeah, and then we get the on-screen credit of Reginald Vell Johnson, who, as I mentioned earlier this week, I was a few meters away from. That's as close as I got to one of the actors in this movie. And we see a huge Christmas tree that goes
elf,
from the floor that's like larger than a floor and a half, because we're sort of like at a half floor, because there's like a balcony here where you can see onto the floor below.
Yeah, this is very much a spare no expense kind of party. I mean, you know, there is a string quartet playing on Christmas Eve. I'm sure you're going to get into this over the course of this podcast, but this is a company that is open having a party the night of Christmas Eve.
Because nobody has kids. You know, they're all workaholics.
I mean, we know at least one. I mean, there is a heavily pregnant woman here. There is a lady with two kids at home.
Yes.
There's dozens of people here. And a string, how much is that string quartet charging to play?
Maybe it's the in-house string quartet. Maybe they always have a string quartet playing all day, every day.
I would love that.
And today, so much. Today, all they're doing is playing Christmas music. But every other day, they're playing other music, you know, soothing music for it's like what Google would do. You know, like I once saw like a video about, you know, the Google offices, all the different things that they offer, you know, their employees. They have in-house doctors, and they have, you know, tons of different restaurants that they can eat in,
a cereal
and,
bar,
you know, like they can they basically have you know people can bring their kids to work, and they have places to put them, you know, where the kids will have fun and stuff like that. It's like the idea of Google was to keep people in the office as much as possible so they don't have excuses to leave, you know, like, oh, I have a doctor's appointment. Well, okay, you don't have to leave, you can stay on the clock and you know, just go over to the next building and see the doctor or whatever it is, you know. So maybe that's what
they have a string quartet playing. If they have a string quartet playing, I'm gonna guess to not 24/7. Let's say they're playing for 8 hours a day. I hope that music is being fed into the elevators, so you haven't got that music. It's so when there's a couple of weeks' time, McLean will be in an elevator. See if he's listening to the string quartet. Oh no, he won't be at that point because that's post.
They've already shut off the power of the music. There's no music.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Too bad.
That's a shame.
We'll never know.
We had a string quartet at my wedding, so I like a string quartet. We had them playing throughout the day. That was fun. I had them playing the Jurassic Park theme.
Did they really?
That was nice. They played the theme from Up.
Wait, what did they play when your wife walked down the aisle? Did they play Jurassic Park thing? Just to give her a little scare?
No, that was later in the day. It was a nice surprise. I got to pick the music they played before she arrived at the venue. They played Bare Necessities, the theme from Fawlty Towers, the sitcom with John Cleese, and the Game of Thrones theme tune. I wanted them to play the Reigns of Castamere from Game of Thrones. I was shouted down from doing that, which... You're not a Game of Thrones
not
guy.
Not so much. I watch it, but I'm not.
Well, The Reigns of Castamere is a song that is played immediately before a bunch of people are killed at a wedding. Is all. So there. So I was not allowed to have them play that at my wedding. I picked Jungle Book.
Wait, was that the Red Wedding? Okay, see, I've seen it.
Yes.
I just didn't remember the music from it. I love the opening theme of Game of Thrones. That's music I love.
Yeah, and I knew within the attendance who would like certain things, so I just kind of kept an eye out for who would work out what was being played at various times. So like kept an eye on my grandma for 40 Towers.
Right. Okay, kind of thing. Cool.
But then we had the theme from Up was our walking down the aisle music. The house goes up in the air. Cool. That thing.
Yeah, I have a good friend that they played Storybook Love from Princess Bride when his wife walked down the aisle.
Okay.
So that was fun
Nice.
as well. Yeah. So
I like his bit.
Takagi begins his speech, and he starts saying, ladies and gentlemen, I want to congratulate each and every one of you for making this one of the greatest years in the history of the Nakatomi Corporation, and probably the last. Everyone cheers.
So I hadn't noticed that. This is the first time I've noticed that.
One second, before you get there. So, and then he goes, on behalf of the chief, and then that's where the minute ends. But while he's speaking, while he's speaking, what didn't you notice?
Well, it was his speaking that him repeating the ladies and gentlemen, which is famous from Alan Rickman coming in, like ladies and gentlemen. I noticed that Takagi has the same thing, the exact same rhythm to it, which is going to be fluke
because of script writing?
Hans repeating that later. Well, it's good script writing, but I mean for Hans coming in and saying the exact same repetition and the same kind of pacing. Because unless he's got a spy who's there, who is the 14th terrorist,
Ooh.
We don't even know about. It's somebody could undercover. But yeah, also we see Bonnie Bedelia
right.
crossing the room.
That's what I wanted to
I
mention.
Think I've ever picked
I
up
never noticed beforehand. That before. So yeah. you see during the speech that she comes out of an elevator and she's looking at a computer printout and just walks through the room, not looking up, not paying any attention.
Arms full of paper.
Completely. You know. Completely not paying any attention to
zigzag printouts,
which is great. That's the thing. That's one of the things I love about movies by minute, that you can, when you're paying so much attention to what's going on, you can actually notice things that you've never noticed before, and it's just
the frame is always
full. And you can see how busy she is, which is great. You know, she's a workaholic
on Christmas.
That's
Eve.
Right.
She's making up for that day. She won't be there tomorrow.
Well, how do you know she's not going to be there tomorrow?
I'm assuming. this isn't set. This isn't filmed in the Nakatomi Plaza.
No, only the externals.
With the Fox Plaza. But I have been to the Fox Plaza. Or I've been outside.
Wait, were you
Plaza.
Hanging from a fire hose?
Not on this instance, no. But it's... It's in LA. It's in Century City. I visited there just as a holiday with my parents. It's like a graduation present. And we were kind of driving down the road and we saw my dad and I like recognized it. Oh, let's go and take a picture at the Nakatomi Plaza, the Fox Plaza. So we pulled into the car park around the back of it and I got out of the car to take a picture. And the security guards came out and told us to go away. That we were shooed off of the property because of the number of diehard fans who do this on
Apparently.
A daily basis.
They wanted to save money and use their own building, and you know, they might have regretted it.
And they were plagued for decades afterwards by fans coming to take
Could
a
be.
Picture of it.
That's very possible. So, I mean, one of the things we didn't mention, the Christmas in 1988 was actually Saturday night and Sunday.
Okay, so this will be Friday night.
No, so that's even... No, this is Saturday night.
Oh, so
Christmas
Eve
is Saturday night.
Sorry, okay.
So my point is that's even crazier that you know, she's still working on Saturday night.
Yeah, I mean, so everyone is dressed up nice for the party. Do we think this was a working day for everyone that's turned into a party, or is this just people who have come back to work on a Saturday evening for a party?
I don't know. I guess it's people who came back for a party, but, you know, Holly decided to come back and actually work. Who knows?
Which, you know, she's a very good businesswoman. She's good at her job. She's always seems to have earned her position. So, yeah, it makes sense that she'd be busy and always working.
Sure. So, you have anything else you want to say about this minute before I get into the script?
No.
Okay, so the script, the only difference is that they have a very long description of the room, you know, where this party is happening. So it says, close on a bottle of Dom Perignon as the cork explodes across a large office floor decorated for Christmas. A Japanese man, mid-50s, standing on a desk, holds up the bottle triumphantly and looks out at an adoring audience of junior executive and office personnel. He is Joseph Takagi, Senior Vice President of Sales for Nakatomi, a multinational corporation. And then he has his speech.
Father of
father. Exactly. And the only difference here is that he says, for helping you make one of the he says, ladies and gentlemen, I congratulate you. Eric says, ladies and gentlemen, only once in the script. I congratulate each and every one of you for making this one of the greatest days in the history of the Nakatomi Corporation. So they changed that to years in the thing.
So that would imply that it was a working day,
Yes.
not just a
Correct.
working a party
And then
email.
it says, in the background, obviously still at work, an attractive businesswoman in her mid-30s studying a computer printout heads towards her office.
Does it describe the size of her
No.
hair?
No. But that's 80s. You don't have to describe it. It's a given.
It's implied.
Completely implied. So nothing, there's nothing in the novel that happens at this point where it, which is connected to this minute, so we're not going to talk about that. So every Wednesday we have Hans Hump Day, where my guests will give their top five Alan Rickman films. So Jay, what have you got for us?
Lot to choose from here from Rickman. Big fan of Rickman. I've got some nostalgic picks. Number five is one of them. Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves is not a good
Cancel
film.
Christmas.
It is a film it is a film I enjoy. I enjoy it a lot, mainly because of Alan Rickman's performance. It is unhinged. It is chewing the scenery. It is glorious in every possible
Yes,
way.
it's a lot of fun.
So that's my number
A lot of
five.
fun. A spoon.
Number four,
Why a spoon?
I enjoy the Harry Potter films, regardless of their creator. And my favorite Harry Potter film, he's perfectly cast as Snape. I cannot imagine anybody
Yeah,
else
he's
doing
great.
Snape. So, Goblet of Fire is my favorite Harry Potter film and book, which is controversial in the rankings of films. I think a lot of people prefer the Prisoner of Azkaban. I don't think that one's actually that great, but I enjoy the plot of Goblet of
Yeah,
Fire
I the truth is
and
I like
everything that
Goblet of
happens in
Fire the
that one.
most also.
It's
Because of
fun.
the competition, you know, the whole thing.
It's got a strong
Yes.
plot. You can kind of tell what's going on, and you bring it in like Brendan Gleeson, David Tennant's in that one. It's a
Yeah.
fun film. I enjoy it. Number three on my list is Love Actually, another film that I kind of get looked down upon for enjoying as much as I do. But there is so much to like about Love Actually. There's so much going on. So many different plots. The Alan Rickman plot is maybe one of the more aggravating ones because like you don't do that to Emma Thompson. You don't
That's
do.
true.
But I like everything. Like if we're doing my favorite Bill Nighy films, then I feel it's been more justified because Bill Nighy is fantastic in Love Actually. Alan Rickman is good, but also just a twat that you want to hate. Number two is Die Hard, a film I'm sure you've heard of
Wait,
before.
what's that one called? Was
I
it?
love
I'm not really sure. I've never heard of it.
Die
Not really.
Hard, the
Oh,
Detective
okay.
Two,
Oh,
I
okay.
think it's called.
There you go.
Love Die Hard. He's great in it. And my number one is Galaxy Quest, a perfect film. I adore Galaxy Quest in every way. Easily the best Star Trek film, a film I saw before seeing anything else Star Trek related or Star Wars related. Galaxy Quest is wonderful. Rickman is wonderful in it. But didn't make my top five, but a perfectly cast role for him is in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, where he voices Marvin, the paranoid android, which is he just has the exact right voice and tone and diction for playing Marvin. Which is my favorite book, but not my favorite adaptation. I just want to give an honorable mention, shout out to Hitchhiker's
Okay,
Guide to the
I'm not
Galaxy.
much of a fan, nor not of the book nor of the movie, but you know, we can't all love everything.
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, great. You want to tell people how they can get in touch with you again?
So today's podcast that I'll plug is Lampody. I used to host the Lambcast, which is the official podcast of the large association of movie blogs. I still appear on it occasionally. And there is a spin-off, a monthly podcast in that feed called Lampity, which is movie trivia, Starlet Jeopardy. Always a lot of fun. We have LAM members on to battle out in there for movie trivia dominance. Rob often submits questions for it. I'm very grateful that he does that.
And
He's been on
I'm also
once
grateful
before, a couple
that
of times before.
I don't play.
Yep, you were very good once and then never again, it seems. You're a sprinter rather than a
What can I
marathon
say?
runner in Lamptey terms. But yeah, so if you just search for Lamcast, then there's a monthly Lamptey post. So the other posts are good as well. Richard is doing a wonderful job hosting those shows, but Lamptey is what you're really going there for. I think we can all agree.
Yes, of course. That's the one I listen to Lampardy as soon as it comes out. The Lambcast, it sometimes takes a few days till I want to listen to it.
But it depends on the topic as well, because you need to like have watched the film or So Lampity is evergreen. Always works.
That's true. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Facebook, or you can go to our website. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.